done her bit. She's written it out for me. I'm blue.
Because he's a boy.
I'm blue and she's red. I don't seem to have very much to say, to be honest. Not even on that one. Oh, I've got that. I'm right at the end. I finish off here. What we're trying to do is interdisperse our stories, because although they are similar, they're not the same. And I think it's worth bearing in mind that all our journeys are very individual.
That's my bit.
Oh, is it? Oh. I've not even read this. And now you've put me off now.
Sorry.
And what we're saying is our journey. But apply what we're saying to where you are. It's really important. And that will come out as we're talking, I'm sure. Intro, Linda. I thought I'd get in there first.
Good morning, everybody. Can you hear me?
No, because you haven't switched it on.
All right.
Can you hear me now? You'll have to forgive me. I woke up with a throat that's like glass today. So I've got no voice. Yeah, I was just thinking about the songs we've just been singing. The joy of the Lord is our strength, and all about God's faithfulness. And really, that's what our stories sort of illustrate. And as Mark said, we've all got a story, we've all got a testimony that are all unique. And I can remember when I was younger being in the youth group, and we used to say our testimonies a lot, didn't we, Mike? And I used to listen to people's testimonies and I used to think, mine's a bit boring. Because I went to Sunday school and then I grew up in church, and all these other people would be sharing all these exciting things that they've been saved from alcoholism, drugs. And then I got to a stage in my life where I actually thought, I thank God that I didn't go through any of that. But at the time, I wanted this exciting testimony. And as I've been reflecting, because I don't think I've told my story for years and years and years, and so it's been quite a reflective thing, really, to sit and actually look at things that have happened in my life and how God's hand and God's faithfulness and God's provision has been with me. So, I'll let Mark start. Go on, you do your bit.
Am I on now?
Yeah. Sorry, it's not a double act, this. It's not meant to be a double act.
Well, as you can see, we haven't practiced this.
You wouldn't practice with me.
I don't practice. I think what I want us to get this morning is not just my story, but I've kind of, because I'm not preaching, this is a preach as well. I want us to understand what God's love is. I want us to experience God's love. I want us to understand that when God saves us, it's a journey. It's a lifelong commitment. Mm. And also, we've got to commit to the course. You know, we've sang some great songs this morning, but a lot of that is around us. It's around us committing to the cause. You know, Christ gave his life for us that we might have new life. But that's not the end of the story. That's just the beginning of what God wants to do with us. And so we've got to commit to what God wants to do in our lives. We've got to find our purpose, and then we've got to make a difference in the way that we live. And so my story is going to kind of cover that angle.
Oh, okay.
It's read for about 20 minutes now.
The thing is, I write lots down and then I miss half of it out. So I've put that we couldn't share everything. Can we have slide one up? This is our story. So we couldn't share everything due to time. I mean, how do you span? I'm nearly 65. Mark was 67 on Friday. We can't cover everything that's happened in those years, but I've picked out some highlights and some lowlights as well, because I think it's good to share the good, the bad and the ugly, and just to see how God has been with us on that journey. Because I think sometimes people can look at you at a certain point in your life and think you've got it all together, you've had it easy, and we haven't, and there's been some dark times for both of us as well. So I'm just going to start off with our background. So we were both blessed with a happy childhood. We both had two parents who worked hard. Mark had two younger brothers and I had a younger sister and a brother. At 5 years old, I moved to a council estate in Horton Green. And Mark was born in Scotland and then moved to Yorkshire. And I've put here, I think he was a bit posher than me.
Absolutely.
So my family were not Christians. My mum was very anti-religious. After being brought up a Catholic, a very strict Catholic, and not having a great experience. My dad was a Protestant, and in their generation, it was frowned upon to marry either denomination. Sorry, you'll have to excuse me, I've got a runny nose as well. I thank my mum and dad for the great work ethic they role modelled to me and my siblings, to all three of us, and we've continued this into our adult life.
Anybody that's been in my office will have seen that. Like Linda said, she wasn't brought up in a Christian home, I was. I'm fourth generation Assemblies of God. So that there is my great-grandfather who was a minister. Now, that's W.J. Thomas, William Thomas. That's my dad. Many of you will know my dad. He was his grandfather. No, it's heavy. It's heavy, man. He was actually part of the Welsh Revival. He worked with the Jeffreys brothers. And he sang, he was a singer and he sang in the Welsh Revival. And from there he got the call of God and he moved to Doncaster where he became the minister in the 1920s, I think it was. That was one of his sons, Malvin, who became a minister. That's my dad, who was a minister. Some of you will know him. My brother Steve is a minister. He's an AOG minister in Bollington near Macclesfield. And I became a minister 20 years ago when I took over from Jim when he actually retired. I think on my journey, when you're part of church, you know all about God. It's just second nature. You're brought up with God. And what I've learned from a very early age was that God was real. He was interested in us. And about the age of 7, I kind of made this first connection with God. And so when you see our little ones running around, I understood at the age of 7 that God loved me and I needed to do something. You know, we can so easily dismiss our children as they don't know what's going on, but they do. Mm. And it's really important, the language we use, the way we conduct ourselves, because they see and they're watching everything. And so about the age of 7, I made this early commitment, this early, yeah, I want God to be part of my life. And that was, I'm 67 now, so that was 60 years ago. When I first kind of had that revelation of God's love. And over the years, my dad being a minister and the way it used to work, every 6 or 7 years we would move house. And so I was born in Glasgow, or Paisley, just outside Glasgow, which is where we lived for my formative years, my very early years. Then we moved to Ripon in North Yorkshire, where dad became a minister, then to Bollington, where he was the minister. Then we moved to Cleethorpes. Dad was the minister of the Grimsby Church. We moved back over here to Poynton, where he established the church at Poynton. He founded that. And then we came here. It was actually an accident that I'm here. Obviously, when we look at God's will for our lives, it wasn't an accident. But I came here. I was disenfranchised. I was trying to work church out and it just didn't seem to work how I thought it should. And there was something about the ministry I was listening to at the time, which was Jim, that actually established some new thinking in my heart and in my life. And so I stayed here. I came over to work with my dad and work over in Poynton. That never happened. I stayed here. I felt this was the place God wanted me to be. And so that's why I'm here. During all of that, though, it all sounds very, very ordinary, that, doesn't it? But while all that was happening, there was something going on inside of me which was quite difficult to manage. And that is that every time I established relationships with a group of people, I was taken away. My education was disrupted because we kept moving. My friendship base was disrupted because we kept moving. And just when I settled and I felt I'd sort of recreated a group of friends, we would move. And I despised that, actually. I began to despise all the stuff that was to do with church. So church really unsettled me. And I kind of became disconnected from church. I didn't like it. Became very disconnected from my parents because they were kind of doing all this stuff and it was impacting on my life in a very real way. And I was quite difficult as a teenager. I know you wouldn't think that. You wouldn't think I was, but I was really difficult. Not in an aggressive way, but I just withdrew from the family. I didn't want to be part of them. I felt not misused, but I just felt that I just didn't want to be part of what was going on. And so that brought me into my early 20s.
So my experience was very different than that because I came to Carmel as a young girl. And I think I mentioned this at the 75th. We moved to this estate in Horton Green, and every Sunday afternoon, this big double-decker bus used to come round the estate, and it was a bit like the Pied Piper, not the child catcher. All these kids would pile on this bus, and I think all the parents were quite happy to have a couple of hours break from the kids, so they didn't mind. And in those days, there was no DBS checks. It wouldn't happen today, would it? But we all piled on this bus, and it was the highlight of my week, getting on this bus and coming here to a Sunday school, and there was hundreds of kids. There was lots of kids here. And I just loved coming and hearing stories about Jesus and being with other children and being with people who genuinely cared as well and looked after us and loved us. And I just couldn't get enough of it. And then I started coming. I found out they had a children's club on a Friday, and there was a mini bus used to come around the estate called the Good News Club. And I used to come every week and hear the good news. And every week I gave my heart to Jesus and then asked for it back the rest of the week because I needed it. Didn't quite get the concept. But it was later on when I was 13 that I then became one of the leaders of that Good News Club with another couple. And I made a commitment to God at age 13. And then I got involved in the youth here. And I know a lot of you have heard us talk about the youth. We had a fantastic youth group in the 70s. And unlike Mark, who didn't connect and have many friends, I made lots of lifelong friends, many who are here today. Mick and Sil, Andy and Sue, Sue and Jed, Karen, Bev, Linda Thorpe, and there may be others. And we've grown up together. We know each other inside out. And that was due to our foundation and the bonds we made in our youth, and it was amazing. And one of the other things we did, I've got slide 2. This is a singing group that a few of us used to be a part of. There was more in the group than that. I couldn't find a picture with all of us on. But every Saturday night, we used to come and practice. We were called Liberty. And we would practice, and I loved the practices. But being painfully shy, I hated performing. And the girls will all remember this. I used to get so nervous and so worked up, a bit like I am today, a bit nervous. I used to get so nervous and worked up. Loved every Saturday practicing. But when I knew we were singing in front of church or we were going out to another church, I'd get myself in a right old stew having to sing. But we had some fantastic times, and it was a great, great memories of that. Then slide 3 is... We had a young person from the church in Grimsby. So, you know, Mark mentioned Grimsby. I had a young person from the church in Grimsby who came to Manchester and met. And he stayed with a couple. He lived with a couple who were coming to Carmel at the time. They've since passed away. And he introduced us to the youth group at Grimsby. So our youth went over to Grimsby. And this is when I first met Pastor Glynn and Betty Thomas. And that's some pictures of them. And Mark is on there. That's Mark there. So that's one of the many events that they were cutting cake at. And I didn't know at this point in my life that those two people would be my in-laws years later. And Betty, especially, was just an amazing role model to me. She was like a second mum. And all those things people say about mother-in-laws were not true about Betty. She was just so lovely and so amazing, and I learned so much from her. And the next slide, please. And I also met this dishy young man called Mark, who had lovely hair. I still see him with hair now. It's lovely dark hair. But that was my first connection with Mark as well in 1977.
Or is it me?
I do wish you'd pay attention.
I think that this photograph here is actually taken outside in the car park when there used to be houses across the road and they were demolished. And I was 20 when I came here, so I'd be 20 years old then. But at the age of 18, although I was disenfranchised with church, I continued to come because I knew that God was real. I knew God wanted to impact me. Hi, Charlie. I knew God wanted to impact me in an awesome way. And so I kept going to church. And at the age of 18, I made a second response to God. And I think it's always important to remember that God is always waiting for us to respond to him. It doesn't matter how many times we do it. It doesn't matter how old or how young we are. God is always available when we want to respond to him. And my second response really was a commitment to the cause. I know all about God. I kind of love God. But there's got to be more to it than what I'm experiencing now. And so I submitted to God. Now, I'm not very good at submitting. Some of us are a little bit more difficult than others. And it took me a long time to submit to God, to allow him to begin to work in my life and to transform who I was. And that's a really important for all of us to understand, that at any moment we can respond to God. We can ask God to do something in us. Now, at that time, I didn't feel that I fitted into church, and sometimes I still don't think I do. I'm a bit different. But my skills were outside the normal church activity, so I couldn't play guitar, I couldn't sing, I couldn't do any of that stuff, but I could play football, I could play cricket, I could play rugby and tennis and all those things. And that just didn't fit into church life back then. To an extent, we can accommodate that now. But many years ago, everything was on a Sunday, and I was kind of, and that's one of the reasons they didn't like me, mum and dad. I couldn't play football. I couldn't do anything on a Sunday. And so that was quite a difficult thing for me to deal with. And so that's when I began to really think about church, how it fits into community, how it fits into culture, how it fits into, as was the 20th century, and still work. It's got to work in the community, in the culture that it is established in. And that's where my thinking about church began to grow and began to blossom. And one of the things that I didn't want to do was be part of a leadership team or become a minister. I've been through all that with my dad. I didn't want to do it again. And so I kind of cut that out of my sort of future. I'm not going to be doing all that stuff. But as we know, God does shape us. He does speak to us and challenges. I'll talk about that in a little while. Oh, hola, just a minute.
Should practice.
All right, I've got a bit more. She's written four for me. So when we commit to the cause of the calling of God on our lives, we have to learn to listen, and we have to learn to be obedient. And God began to work in me, and I began to understand what church was, began to understand its role in everybody's lives, so that church becomes part of who we are and the focus of our lifestyle and our behaviours. It's got to make a difference. We sing all these songs all the time, and they're very, very powerful songs. But if we go out of here and that's all it was, it's not made any difference. And I began to understand that what we do and what we say on a Sunday morning, what we hear, has got to impact our daily lives, because if it doesn't, it's not doing the things that it should do. And that's when we've got to submit to God. That's when we've got to come to God and go, it's not about me. It's about you. And I came to that point in my life where I began to understand all of this stuff. And it was like a wave of revelation to my heart. And I'll continue that in a little while.
Okay, so fast forward a few years, and I've put here big life decisions. When we're young, we have some big decisions to make, don't we? And Mark and I both married, not each other at that point, and unfortunately both our marriages ended in divorce, which was a massive thing at the time in the 80s. I was only young, I was in my 20s. And in church, I don't think people knew how to deal with you in those days. I went through a really dark, hard, lonely and very isolated time as a young person and didn't know where to go and where to turn, really, apart from to God. And looking back, I have to say God was with me every step of the way, and his promises that he would never leave me nor forsake me. He was my rock and my anchor during that time. And for Mark too, it was a really difficult time. But I went through something that has been a massive release for me that was really powerful for me at the time, and I've shared with people since, and that was the power of forgiveness. I had to forgive my ex-husband before I could move on, and that wasn't easy. But with God's help and God's strength, I could do that. And it brought me freedom, it brought me release, and it enabled me to refocus and move on in my life. And I think I will just say to anybody here, forgiveness is such a powerful thing. So if you've got anybody who you need to forgive, then please do that, because it can stop you moving on, can make you bitter. It only affects you if you don't forgive. And it was a massive, massive thing for me in my life. And as I was doing this, I thought, do I share that? But it was a turning point in my life for me. At a really hard and dark time, God was with me, and I was able to move forward. And then slide 5. So even though Mark and I had known each other from 1977, it took until 1999 for us to become Mr. and Mrs. And definitely a God match. And the way it happened could have only been God, but that's for another time. It's too long a story. So Mark was an elder at Carmel at the time, and working as a civil servant. I was teaching at the time and part of the children's work, which was my passion. And then slide 6. This is another God thing. During this hard time for me, God gave me a vision to run an after-school club. So it'd never been done before at Carmel. And it took me ages because I was so shy, so nervous. Just even sharing it with the pastor at the time, who was Jim, and the leaders, was quite a big deal for me. But then how God brought everything together, he brought a team of, there must have been 25 of us in the end. We had different teams, and it was called the Jigsaw Club. And we used to meet here every Monday night, and we'd have between 80 and 100 children. And you'll notice some people on there, they've got Brenda on there and Beryl, Tracy, Sue, who else? Me, Mark, Alex is on there. And, yeah, lots of others joined us as well at different points in the years we were running it. But it was an amazing, amazing time for all of us, and a great team effort. It was definitely a God thing, but God had given me that vision and I had to be obedient to that. And we had great fun. We had great fun together as a team. Not only on a Monday night, but we used to meet and do some crazy things together as well. And it was really good. That season did come to an end because the government... Because the parents used to say to us, can you run this club every night? And we were so shattered after a Monday night. It was like, no, we can't. It takes us all our energy because we were all rushing from work every Monday. We used to give the children tea. We made crafts together. We used to sing, dance, play games. We could only manage one night. And what happened, the government introduced funding for after-school clubs, which were every night. So it sort of naturally came to an end. That season ended. And that's what happens sometimes in ministry. It's for a season, and then that season's over. Mark and I have had the privilege of serving God together in missions. I couldn't find one picture of us in Africa, could I? And Mark served in India with a couple of the guys here. Andy and Eddie went to India as a team. And then Mark?
I've only got two lines. One of the things I said to God was I would never be a missionary. And I did. He got me. But there is something about being obedient to God that bears fruit. It's not about us. It's about what we're doing for others. It's about imparting something of who God is to those around us. And as part of my journey, I also said I would never become in leadership or become a minister. But I did. In 2005, I became the assistant minister here with Jim and with Jackie, working part-time. And then when he retired in 2006, surprisingly, because I wasn't expecting anything other than somebody else to do take on that role, Jim just said to me, I think it's you. You know, that big finger that comes out of the sky, it's you. And so Linda will talk a little bit about that, because that was quite a huge thing. Considering that I didn't want to do that, it was never on my agenda. Even though I felt a call of God on my life to do something, I never ever wanted to be a church minister and leader. And so it was a bit of a shock when Jim just said, I think it's you, I think you're ready. Because I hadn't been working to that at all. And it kind of caught us both out, didn't it?
It certainly did. It was something I definitely wasn't prepared for and really didn't want to do. And I had a lot of questions for God. Why? It's you know. And again, I think for everything I've done, God has equipped me. But I just didn't feel equipped for that. And we were standing in the shoes of, you know, filling big shoes, weren't we, for Jim and Jackie. And I just didn't want people to compare me to Jackie and want me to do the things she'd done, because I'm totally different than Jackie. And I really had to settle it that I wasn't going to be put into a mould and I wasn't going to be somebody I couldn't be. I had to be me. And my passion was for children, children's ministry. And I'm a background person. I'm not somebody who likes to be at the front, as you can see today. So I really had to settle that with God and ask questions, because, like I said, I'd you know, sort of been with Mark's mum and dad, who had been pastors. I spent a lot of time with Jim and Jackie and seen some of the things they'd had to deal with. And I just thought, I don't know if I want that for my life, dealing with all people's problems. And that's not what my plan was, God. But obviously God had other plans. And I think we're 20 years down the line now, aren't we? Yep. Still feels new, but yeah, that was another difficult time in my life when God has equipped us and prepared us.
You can carry on.
There's two slides. Oh, yeah. Slide 7. Shows Mark getting his status with AOG with Tony and Amy. That was at Mattersea College. I think a few from church came that day, didn't we? We went. That was receiving his AOG status. And then slide 8.
So when I was at Grimsby, I was a youth leader at 18. And this is my youth group, all of which are now full-time in the ministry. It was an amazing group of young men. And there's others to add on to that as well. Many of you will know Andy King, who's on your left. Andy comes every now and again. Paul Council is a close friend of mine. There's me. Dave Jones, who's still in Grimsby. That's my brother Steve on the end. And there's another one, Brian Robinson, also became a minister. It was a really fruitful group of young people. And it's amazing what God can do with just ordinary guys or ordinary young men who prepare to go, let's just do it. Allow God to do in our lives what we want. So it was just a really fruitful time in our lives where God really challenged and encouraged us as a leadership group.
I'm just going to share another very dark, difficult period I had in my life. It was when I was single and working as a teacher, and I bought a house. And due to the housing crash in 1989, my mortgage doubled overnight. So I'd sort of planned this house, planned all how to pay it for everything, and then suddenly my finances were not there. And for the first time in my life, I'd experienced not having any money, not being able to buy food for myself, because obviously I had to pay my bill. I had to commit to all my bills first. And I did get myself in a mess financially and experienced the embarrassment and shame of debt, which was a really, really hard time. And it made me think about the work that Lisa does with CAP and how vital it is, how important it is, and sometimes how just people's life circumstances can change. And financially, you can be okay one day. Illness, relationship breakdown, for so many reasons, losing a job, you suddenly got no money, and it's really difficult. But I had a very supportive family who I eventually did talk to. It took me some time, and that's one of the things that I know Lisa finds with some of the clients, that sometimes it's the embarrassment. They don't want to tell people, share that with people. It's really hard. And I was able to share that. And it was during that time that I really saw the generosity of people in my church family here and how God provided for me through his people. And it's a principle that I've stuck to since. And I just find it, I just love giving. I just love giving. It blesses me so much. And I learnt that from that really dark and hard time. And there's a song in there and sayings that say the hard times make you strong. And they really do. And they prepare you for another season and to support other people who are going through similar things. Other big life decisions were jobs. So I knew I always wanted to work with children, and I wasn't sure whether I wanted to go down the health route or the education route. Originally, I think I wanted to be a children's nurse, or I quite fancied midwifery. And at the time, they changed the schedules when I was coming out of college, and you had to do your full nursing first and then specialise at the end. So I decided I didn't want to do that, so I went down the teaching route. So I was a teacher for 20 years in a school in Droylsden, and absolutely loved my job there, working with nursery reception and year one as it is now. It was middle infants then, and really loved it. And then I moved on to a job just after we got married, working for Home Start. And it was during this job that it sort of made me have that passion really to foster children, because I was working with families in the community, and unfortunately some of the families I were working with, the children were removed from them, and I saw the heartbreak of families being sort of separated, but not just children being separated from the parents, children being separated from the siblings as well. And I remember saying to Mark, I really want to foster siblings. I want to keep families together. And it took another, because I had another job after that, didn't I? It took another 12 years before that happened. And when we knew we were going to foster, we needed a different house. We needed a bigger house, because our family was growing at that time. We had grandchildren, and we knew we needed a lot of bedrooms. And it was just like, well, how are we going to get a big house that will accommodate what we want to do? And Mark had been talking for a long time and had this vision to build his own house. And I was just listening, and I just kept saying to him, well, I'm not living in a caravan. And I'm not, after watching some of the programme, I'm not going through all that stress. But we didn't do that. And God provided for us. And slide 9... is our, I couldn't find a picture that didn't have snow on it. We must have hundreds. And that is not to show that we've got a big house, but to show God's provision, because God provided. And we've worked out that our 3 children have lived there, 6 grandchildren, and it's been a sanctuary to around 30 foster children. And that is God's provision. We couldn't have gone and bought that house. God provided, and we built it in stages, and we were able to stay with friends whilst it was being built. And it all came together, and it was part of God's plan. Then slide 10. three children you might recognise, those that have been coming for a while. These are three children that were fostered and have become part of our family now. They're in their 20s. But that picture, the first picture, the Christmas picture, is 2012 when they first came to us. Was a week before Christmas. And, yeah, Kane's only little there. He's very tall now. And they're a blessing to us as well. And then slide 11 is a family picture. And not all the grandchildren are on there. But I picked this picture last week, and then there's a girl right in the middle with a red bow in her hair, and she's just walked in church this morning, haven't you, Sharni? So Sharni was one of our foster children for a few years, and I've not heard from her for a while. And then just this week, she texted me, she said, Linda, can I come to church on Sunday? I said, of course you can, you're always welcome to come. And here she is, so it's great to see you, Sharni. And there she is on a picture. I don't know how old you were there. Can you remember? 12, yeah. Yeah. And what are you now? 19? Yeah. Yeah. And then I've put, so at 60, when others think to retire, I started a new job. I currently support 8 foster families and their children, many who you will have seen with me during the past 5 years. So I've been doing that job for 5 years now. So I've put here that each job I've had, I always felt I wasn't equipped to do, lacked confidence, felt out of my depth, but always trusted God and he equipped me and gave me all I needed to not only perform, but excel and be acknowledged for the work I've done, which is testimony to God's provision and goodness. So as I look back over my almost 65 years, I can see God's hand in every area of my life. And I can truly testify to his goodness, his faithfulness, his provision, his peace, his hope. So as a young girl from a council estate who was painfully shy, lacked confidence, low self-esteem, I can see how God has used me and then used Mark and I as a team to show God's love in our own unique way and style. God is good.
So each of us has got a story. We've reached this far in our lives. We're here today, and our lives tell the story of who we are. But we want them to also to tell the story of what God is doing with us, because God takes what we give him and he does something amazing with it. And so often in our Christian life, and I've experienced this as well, we can feel like we're treading water, or we're going around in circles, or this is as good as it's going to get. This is as far as I can go. But I want you just to understand that that is not a true statement, that God is always looking to move us to where he wants us to be. But for our Christian faith to work, so when we become a Christian, he sets us free from so many things. But sometimes we can kind of get stuck in that. We can get stuck in where we were and lose sight of what God wants to do with us. And God wants us to break free from all that stuff. He wants us to break free from who we were. He's making a new creation. He's doing something new and fresh in us. And he wants to work in us, but we've got to commit to that. We've got to commit to allowing God into our lives. We've got to learn to listen and learn to be obedient to his leading. See, sometimes God asks us to do things that we don't want to do. But it's for our good. It's because he can see what he's trying to do. We can't. We walk by faith, not by sight. And so God will always have a plan for our lives that we've got to walk by faith in to achieve what God wants us to do. See, he began a work in me that I didn't want to do. But here I am after all these years. God has just transformed my attitude and my heart towards what church is all about. I began to understand church, its role in everybody. Church is so important. It really is important. It's not just important for you. It's important for the person you sat next to. It's important for the person who you sit next to in the community. It's important that you know who God is in your life, because when we do that, we begin to change the world. You know, we want a world that is changed. We want a world that is different from what it is. And that's the role and responsibility of the church, or in other words, you and me. But we've got to live that. We've got to acknowledge the call of God in our lives. And we see a progression. See, when we begin to allow God to work in us, I didn't arrive here after one day. There was a journey to go on. And sometimes we don't understand where the journey is taking us. But I tell you, the journey is really important, because it connects you with God, and it establishes a faith walk with him as we walk day by day. So I started, like many young people, as a Sunday school teacher, a youth leader, or part of the Jigsaw Club team. I just had to be. I didn't have an option. House group leader, deacon, elder, associate pastor, senior pastor, retired pastor is coming. I'm looking forward to that. But all that kind of stuff is part of a journey, and you will be on a journey, and you may not understand why you are where you are, but God is always taking you somewhere. You've just got to be committed to what he's doing and allow him to work in your lives. Our responsibility is to stay connected to the vine. And when we do that, we grow. When we do that, we produce fruit. When we do that, God is creating something new in us, and we become God's. I love that when Paul says that you're all God's letter. You are a letter that is read by everybody who meets you. You're read. People read you. At the moment, I'm on medication, and it's taken away the taste of my mouth. I can't taste anything. And so everything tastes really funny. And I was just thinking, you know, sometimes when people think about church, church tastes a bit funny to them. It does. It kind of just doesn't fit, doesn't taste right. And sometimes that's not the person who is eating its fault or tasting it. It's the fault of the fruit itself. See, if we're bearing good fruit, it'll taste good. It'll be attractive. It'll be something that people want to engage with. It'll be something that people question and go, why are they doing? Why? Why are they going through that? And yet they're full of life. They're full of who God is. And so we've got to taste good to those around us. As we look back, as I look back, you can see the journey that we've been on. But I couldn't see it when I set off. And I think one of the things that in our humanity is we want to know where we're going. We always want to know where we're going and how am I going to get there. And our journey with God is a little bit different than with that, because we have to trust him. We have to put our hands into his hands. We've got to trust that where he's taking us, it's going to produce something that is supernatural and eternal, not only for us, but for those around us. One of the great things that I always come back to is that when God starts something in us, he completes it. Okay, his heart is to complete what he started in you. He never gives up. The only person who ever gives up is us. We give up sometimes in our journey with God. But I'm so grateful that he never gives up on me. In those times when I've been disobedient, when I've been a little bit lazy, when I've not done the things I should have done, he's never given up on me. He's always pursued me. And remind yourselves day by day that God never gives up on you. He started something in you. You are a new creation. All the stuff that has gone before has been dealt with. It's gone. And he wants to produce something new and fresh in each of us. My journey with God is my responsibility. Your journey with God is your responsibility. We're here to encourage you. We're here to shout you on, to give you opportunity to hear what God wants to do. But ultimately, we've got to make that decision. That decision that I am going to follow Jesus is so important. It's so important that we have that clarity of understanding that we are committed to the cause of who Jesus is. He says in the Word, doesn't it? I've got to die daily. And that is so hard to do. Yet if we're committed, if we want the fullness of God in our lives, we've got to be committed to the cause. We've got to die daily to allow him to produce something supernatural in us. I'm just an ordinary guy, nothing special about me. I've got no special abilities, But when we put our lives in the hands of God, he does something and you go, wow, that's just amazing. And as I look back over my life, I just go, wow, that is amazing. God has just been so faithful and blessed. And he's just kind of completed me. And I'm so grateful for that. So that's our story. That's our story. And our story, mine and Linda's, is a little bit different. But God brought us together. And he's provided somebody for me he talks about making up my lack. I've got a lot of lacks. Linda makes up for most of them. But God's provided that. It's a supernatural connection, supernatural marriage. And I'm so grateful for all that she is and all that she's done for me. I'm not sure what I've given to her, but she's given me lots. And I'm so grateful for all that she's done. I'm going to hand back to Lisa now. Thank you.
That was great.